Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Christy.
Hey, Will.
How are you?
I'm super jazzed about our guest today.
I am too. Who is it?
It's Dan Povenmire, the legend, the icon, the Phidias and Ferb creator, amongst so many amazing things.
Doesn't he also have like 9 trillion followers on the TikTok machines?
He is many things, and we're going to get into it today on I Hear Voices.
All right.
I Hear Voices.
What's up, Dan? We are excited to have you on I Hear Voices today. We get right into it, but like, you know, here we are.
That's good.
Have you met Will
good.
Before?
I don't know that I've met Will. He looks like I might have met him. He looks like vaguely familiar. Have we met?
That's how I thought about it with you as well. I think we've done something together in the past at some point,
yes,
I would imagine.
At some point. Or at least been at the same party or something at some point.
Yes. We
were probably on a yacht for Michael...
Kevin Michael Richardson?
Kevin Michael Richardson's 50th party.
Okay, so then we absolutely were. Yes, that is exactly
I think that's where we probably met, yes.
Yes.
How cool.
The four-hour
Does everybody
excursion.
Know who Kevin Michael Richardson is? Oh, I love that man.
Kevin Michael Richardson, yes. The voice of everybody. And he'll be on Our New Voices at some point. But I also think I did a Phineas and Ferb back in the day.
Oh, excellent. So you may have met Swampy, because I would usually only come in on the days that I was recording, because I was back doing the rest of the stuff, and Swampy was running the recording. So who did you do on Phineas?
Yeah, I honestly can't remember. We were doing, I think we might have, didn't we do some kind of Kim Possible thing with Phineas and Ferb?
Not verbally.
We did for, they had that Spot the Difference episodes where we would add visual things to stuff and play them and to see if kids could spot anything, and we put Kim Possible into a shot that, you know, we got some assets from one of the Kim Possible shows. And I'm sure we also did
some sort of like promo crossover kind of thing where it's, you know, it's like, hi, I'm KP, and
I'm
Ron, and this is Phineas and Ferb. Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
There were thousands of those and continue to be.
And one thing I will say is, Dan, Phineas and Ferb took over the Epcot ride of Kim Possible, and we were okay
That's
with it.
True.
We're okay with it.
That's
because
true.
If we were going to give it to anybody, we were happy to give it to Phineas and Ferb.
They just took down the Phineas and Ferb version of that at Epcot.
Yeah.
Two months ago or something. Well, it wasn't even a ride. It was sort of like a go around and follow these instructions kind of thing.
I never played the game as Kim.
Never played it all the way through, but I played like a section of it when they were putting it together. Swampy and I went out and did some press out there. And they've told me that they're sending me one of the Doofenshmirtz sculpts from the
so
park.
So cool.
Which I'm so excited about, but like they told me this like a month ago. And so I'm like constantly looking because it looks like it's going to be like 4 feet tall. I'm like,
yeah.
Like I keep looking for a big box and it has not come yet. I hope they remember to, you know, like they got my address and everything.
They'll do
but,
it.
But
I
want to
put them here
so
in the corner
be...
of my office.
Oh, it's yes, so
Nikki's exactly. just going to be like standing at your driveway one day and holding a massive
yes.
package.
So I have a question because you mentioned no, you only cool. come in, you only come, you were going in there when you were recording your character because you're doing yeah. double and triple and quadruple duty on Phineas and Ferb. So
I'm doing a lot. On,
I mean,
on
you
the create,
show, so. Co-created the show. You were, I'm sure, writing yeah. on the show, producing the show, helping with every aspect of the show and doing character voices.
Yes, I was the showrunner and also writing songs for the show and also doing you know, like I basically would do Doofenshmirtz and then like two other incidentals if we needed incidentals. There were only I did Klimpaloon, this weird magical, you know, recurring character that was a magical old-timey bathing suit that lived in the Himalayas for some reason.
that,
but
that.
But otherwise, I was just Doofenshmirtz. But I was, you know, making notes on boards. I designed the characters. I was directing first season until I made them hire some of the directors, so I didn't also have to do that. But I was back doing, you know, doing a lot of the day-to-day work of just making all those decisions and stuff for the show and redrawing.
God, you're so
stuff
lazy, Dan.
I'm a bit ADD, so it's I can hyper focus on a bunch of things at a time if I like them all.
Can we can we go back to the beginning of your career in animation?
Yes.
And just what got you into the world of animation? What attracted you to this incredible business of show?
You know, it's funny because when I was applying to colleges, I applied to CalArts and to USC and I sent in a bunch of my artwork along with, you know, with other things for my portfolio. I sent some actual art because I was a professional artist when I was like 12, and I was this weird. I was a child prodigy kid as a illustrator, and I sent in some artwork for them, and they sent me back a thing, and I was applying to the live action film department at CalArts, and they said, and they sent me a thing that said, we're not making decision on the live action department for a while yet, but we did show some of your artwork to the animation department, and they said they will take you right now, that you'll get an early admittance if you want to go into animation. And I said, I don't want to go into animation, and I threw that letter away. And I ended up going to USC and never got into that film school either, but I took nothing but film classes, and then I dropped out. And I was just looking for work to, you know, to keep the power on, and they were looking for a storyboard artist on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 80s, the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah, the great one.
And I was like, well, I understand filmmaking and I can draw. I should go and apply for that. And so I applied for that, and I did storyboard cleanup for them for like a year or so, just freelance. Like every week they would give me a new one, and I'm making good money. And then I went in house and did work on the Toxic Crusaders and James Bond Jr. And
wow.
And then
Toxic
when
Crusaders
that, when that was drying up, I suddenly, you know, like they didn't have other shows for a while, and so I was out of work for a while, and I had let all my freelance art stuff go, you know, like sort of fall by the wayside then. And there was like 6 months where I didn't work at all, and I was down to my last like $200 or $300 in the bank, which was going to be rent next, you know. And I was like, I really need to get something going. And I applied to the Simpsons, and I applied to the Simpsons And I got hired to write a low budget slasher movie on this in the same week. And The Simpsons said, "Oh, we'll hire you. Come on in and draw here." And so I was going in during the day and drawing, and at night I would come home. I would have dinner. I would get up and I would start writing this script for this low budget slasher movie till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. I'd go to sleep. I'd wake up. I'd go into work again, and I did that for 2 weeks, and then I had a movie that was going to get made that I had written the script for, and I was told that I could direct it, but they would only be able to pay me this amount of money. And I was working at The Simpsons and making at least that in the next month, and then I was going to continue to work months and months and months. And I realized I would have to quit The Simpsons to go and direct this low-budget slasher movie. And I suddenly realized that all the time I had spent in live action, I didn't really necessarily feel a kinship to the people in live action. I didn't feel like those were my people. And it was actually a party at Swampy's house. My partner on Phineas and Ferb was another artist on The Simpsons, and he was throwing a party. And my first wife was an actress, and I was trying to get her to come to this party with me. She was like, "I don't know if I want to go to an industry party." And I was like, "Let's just go. We'll make an appointment. We'll just make an appearance. And these are a bunch of people I'm working with." And I was like, "Okay, we'll go." And we went, and we had a great time. And nobody quoted their resume to me. Nobody nobody got a glassy-eyed look and started turning away if they felt like I couldn't help their career or anything like that. And it was just a bunch of people hanging out and having a great time. And we got in the car, and my wife was like, "You know what that was? That was an actual party. I haven't been to an actual party in like 10 years in Los Angeles. I've never been to it. Like, that was great." And I was like, "I think these are my peeps. I think this is, you know." And so I turned down the gig on the slasher movie, you know, directing it. And I just stayed at The Simpsons. And then from The Simpsons, I ended up going to Rocco's Modern Life over at Nickelodeon, which they needed. They needed people who could write and draw, and I had done comic strip for a daily comic strip at USC for the school at USC for the time I was there, and I had, you know, so hundreds of things that I had written and drawn, and I came in and handed it to Roger Chasson, who was the supervising director, who had animated Jessica Rabbit for the movie.
Back in the day, yeah, absolutely.
And if I had known that, I would have been a lot more
nervous.
Nervous, I would have been like. But I handed him like a book of my comic strip, and he laughed at the first like three pages and said, "Okay, you're hired." And it was like the easiest job interview I'd had. But that's the
okay. Way, so wait, I have to ask you a question, because there's so much there that we could do an entire show on just the stories you told. Because first of all, I have to start with, because you glossed over this very quickly.
Okay.
You
were
a professional artist at 12?
12 years old.
At 12 years old, I was doing all the juried art shows in the Deep South. I grew up in Alabama. And there were a bunch of art shows in that whole area where you had to send in slides of your work, but you didn't have to send in a picture of yourself.
Okay.
And they would decide whether you were good enough to go to these art shows. And
so it was a blind
thing. And they would always pick me. They would always like approve me, and I would show up, and they were like, "So is your father the artist?" Is it like, no, it's. It's
you
me.
Can't record
like,
it,
and they would do like stories on me in the paper, and I got, you know, like the Atlanta Institute of the Art, or whatever that's called in Atlanta, was really trying to recruit me to come to their art department and stuff. But I was making good money for a 12, you know, like for a teenager who's not able to pay rent. I would go to these art shows and make $1,500 in a weekend, and I was doing that a bunch of times in the year. There's a magazine that the San Diego Zoo puts out that I sent them some art, and they paid me to use one of their things on the cover, one of my things on the cover, and I was just doing a lot of that, and with those proceeds, I bought a Super 8 camera and movie projector, a sound on sound thing where I, you know, where I could make little movies, because that's what I really wanted to do, was make movies.
And this is where I find your journey very interesting, because we will eventually get to how he is obviously an icon, but an icon in the whole TikTok world right now. He's got 5.8 million followers. That is not something to play down.
It's a lot of people to be paying attention to what I do.
But what I find so interesting is that a man, a legend such as yourself, I understand your pain about loving film and cinema and taking the classes. I went to Columbia for that. Yeah. I was waitlisted at AFI. I couldn't get in. I tried twice. I tried to get into their women's program for directing. I was waitlisted because of their silly little reasons, whatever. I get it. But at the same time, our business, it is so weird about who it lets in. The gatekeeping is
very strange.
It's so strange. It's like you could have the most obvious amount of like talent, enthusiasm, professionalism, and it just doesn't go in your direction. And you know, it just is really encouraging that you were, you know, rejected. Yeah. I'm sorry to say. Yeah. Well, so many people are fans of yours, and I don't know if they know that about your story, that, you know, that was maybe in a multiverse, you're Scorsese somewhere.
Yeah, it's possible.
But you're Scorsese USC of the animation world. That's the joy.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, I've done very well, and I think you end up finding the thing that you're really meant to do. And I think, you know, part of the reason I threw away that CalArts letter was because at that time, that was like the Dark Cauldron days. That's where nothing good was happening in animation. Disney was doing Oliver and Company, and you know, like there were no classic animated things happening, and TV was all like the Care Bears or Transformers. It's all stuff based on you know, like
toys.
So there was nothing cool happening in animation. By the time I got into animation, The Simpsons had happened, and suddenly that was cool. And Ren and Stimpy and Batman the animated series, and then Little Mermaid. There was this whole second renaissance in animation. So suddenly it was like, oh no, I can do all the things that I do in animation. I can, you know, and that's what I do. I, you know, like for a living now, I draw silly pictures. I write stupid stories, I talk in silly voices, and I write stupid songs, which are all the things that I would be doing if I was unemployed. I would just, nobody would be paying me to do them. It's all the stuff I would be at home doing by myself. So,
well, that's also the joy of our industry, though. It's what, I mean, it's like if you want to be a doctor and you're rejected from medical school, you can't walk away and go, you know what, I'm going to go try it anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas if, you know, in the entertainment industry, yeah, exactly. But entertainment industry, you hear stories all the time, the Quentin Tarantinos, the Dans, all these people where it's like, I got rejected, so I went, I'm going to go do it anyway, and it become huge successes.
Yeah,
so it is one of the few industries in the world where you don't need the education if you have the talent and the drive and everything else you can do. Yeah. If you just have the will to go out and make it happen, you can make it happen. Now, it's still winning the lottery. I mean, the chances of it happening are slim.
Yes.
But you then get people like Dan who say, okay, well, you said no to me here. I'm going to go find a different avenue and become hugely successful over here.
And also, it's much easier. I think the reason that I found this a better way to get in is because you can show, like, somebody who doesn't draw doesn't think they can draw. Someone who doesn't write or doesn't direct thinks they could write or direct.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, interesting. Like
people think they can write because they can spell. So it's you know, it's like, oh, I would be able to do that if I just sat down and thought about it.
Yeah.
So you don't fight against that thing where people who are there to hire you sort of feel like they could do it as well. Also, somebody who doesn't write can't read a script and tell you whether it's any good.
Yeah.
Because they don't get what's good or bad about it. But somebody who doesn't draw can look at a drawing and say, that looks like what it's supposed to look like. So to me, it's like the fact that I could sort of draw anything you put in front of me. I've always been able to change styles to whatever show I'm on and stuff like that. The fact that I was able to just go, oh, you want it drawn like that? Okay, I'll do this. they were like, oh, okay, well, you're hired. That's it's an easier way to get work, I think, because it's a more demonstrable talent, I think.
Who are the artists that inspire you, Dan, or did inspire you?
Oh, my goodness. It really sort of all starts and stops with Chuck Jones. I mean, there's a lot of others, but he's the one that every frame that I've seen that's drawn by Chuck Jones just makes me go, oh, that's the perfect, and that's what I would always try to do when I was boarding, which I don't do as much of now. I boarded the pilot to the new show and the first episode, but whenever I would be like working on a visual gag, I would just put post-its over post-its over post-its and try to like keep pushing the pose until it was perfect. Like, okay, if I go any further, it's not going to be good anymore. This is right where it has to be. And I just was always trying to channel Chuck Jones when I drew. And as far as visual storytelling, I was always trying to channel Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki, who I got to meet. I got to meet Chuck Jones at a book signing once.
That's very cool.
And then I got to meet Miyazaki in his studio in Japan, which was one of these really cool moments. I was actually in
Howl's Moving Castle, and that was one of the cool moments.
That's what they were making when I went to the studio. Okay. Yes,
it was
in the middle of Howl's.
Getting to go in and do some of the, I think I did three characters for the English dub, was really cool.
Fantastic.
And Jason Marsden, who has been a guest on the show and is my best friend growing up, was actually the lead in Spirited Away.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, we talked about how he booked that entire role from his closet.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Right. What a great story.
You hear those. But, yeah, you do. I imagine it would be like any other medium where, you know, there are the people that do it, and then there are people that do it well, and then there are people that do it so well.
So that well that other people just like.
Yep. Yeah. That's one of those. I felt that the way the first time I saw Akira, where it was like, oh, this is what anime and animation could be. Like, okay, it's not. Because I grew up on all the shows you were talking about, which when you're 8 years old, Thundercats, Transformers, G.I. Joe, GoBots,
really cool.
Care Bear, they were the greatest thing in the world.
Yes.
But then you get a little older and you watch the first episode of Batman in the Animated Series and you go, oh, wait, everything's different now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
Ren and Stimpy was that for me. Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah. You know, you've got those moments. Okay, so you get a call. Hey, we want you to come in to work on a little show called The Simpsons. Now, what was The Simpsons when you joined them?
Now, it was cool because I loved them on the Tracy Ullman show. And when I heard they were doing that, I actually applied to them way early and got turned down. I didn't have any studio experience. It was before I was on the Ninja Turtles. And I'd never worked in a studio and they were just a little scared about it. I applied. The time they took me was second season, and I went in. So I had already seen first season and fallen in love with it, and I was like, "This is a show I really want to work on." So I went.
So you were a fan already by the time you were on that. That's cool.
Exactly. Second season, they gave me a drawing test, and then you know, like before, I'd just taken in like this far out man. Hippie Land amusement sequence I did for Tommy Chong's movie it was his first movie without Cheech. It was called Far Out Man, and I did this psychedelic animation. It was like the first actual animation gig that I had done. And
wow, that's a good one.
And I took that and showed them that. And when I look at it now, it's like I understand why they didn't take me. Because you know, it's like this doesn't look like The Simpsons. It doesn't. You know, there's a lot of things I was doing wrong back then and stuff. But later on, they were like, let's see if you can do The Simpsons. And I drew them. They were like, okay, you're in. So,
did you have a lit agent or who was representing
you? No, I didn't have an agent till Disney called me a year after turning down Phineas and Ferb. They called me out of the blue and said, I know this is out of the blue, but we want to option Phineas and Ferb. And I was like, okay. And they were like, so just give us the name of your agent. And we'll be like, well, I better get an agent. That was how I got an agent. Everything else.
So how
else
did you find all these applications? Like, cause I've noticed that you're really proactive about finding these opportunities.
you would think so. I've sort of feel like most of that just sort of happened to me.
Okay.
Like somebody would say, hey, I saw an ad for this. I was not looking through stuff, looking for ads. It was just people that I knew said, you can draw, right? You should do this.
Here's
you
a
know, yeah. Yeah, literally my first animation gig with Tommy Chong was me at home on a Sunday just eating cereal and a friend of mine calling saying, Dan, you can do animation, right? And I was like, yeah, I took that one animation class in college. And they said,
she said,
oh, I'm going to give somebody your number. And then like two phone calls later, I'm talking to Tommy Chong, who's like, hey, man, I hear you're a great animator. And I was like, okay, yes,
hey,
that's me.
That is the entertainment awesome. Industry. The entertainment industry is fake it till you make it.
Yes,
you say yes
exactly.
to whatever they ask. Hey, can you play the drums? Yes. Sure can. And then figure it out.
Yes, and then you learn.
Figure out what
that.
So oh, you go exactly. into The Simpsons, you sit down,
yes.
and you are desk mates with your future partner, right?
Well, he's right across the aisle from me. There's there was this huge bullpen of just cubicles as far as the eye could see on the bottom floor, and we were both on the aisle, and so we got to know each other that way.
And did you hit it off right away? And you had the same kind of animation
yes.
background. You knew all that kind of, and it was like, oh, this could be
yes.
something here.
Yeah, no, we had a great time. And actually, he's the one that got me to come and apply to Rocco because we were getting laid off. And I was like, so what are you going to do? He's like, I've already got work lined up at Nickelodeon on a show called Rocco. You should go apply. And I was like, all right. You know, it's another one thing. Somebody just said, you should apply for this. Okay, I will. And then I got it. And then we got put together as a writing team. And that's where the magic really started happening. Because
okay.
we just had a great time writing together and just had, like just sort of like finishing each other's sentences in funnier and funnier ways. And
wow.
So where did this eventually, I want to get into obviously how Phineas and Ferb came about and all that kind of stuff. But where did you go from this to doing voiceover? I mean, were you doing the voices of the characters that you're
well,
kind of animating, whether it's The Simpsons or whatever, you're kind of throwing the voices out
I would always pitch, pitch gags. And especially at Nickelodeon, you're writing the show. So the first time anybody sees the show, the executives see the show, you're just pitching it to them. And Swampy and I both came from performance backgrounds. I did a lot of theater, through college, and out of college, I made a living doing dinner theater for a while, and I was also in a band. I did a lot of performing, and Swampy was the same. And so we were, which is very unusual for animators to be also outgoing.
Extroverts.
Extroverts.
yeah. Absolutely.
It makes us real outliers, but we would go into the pitch and have a great time pitching and get the executives just laughing all the way through. We could really just work a room. And I think that's really what set us apart. Like one of the other board artists once found us like, so how'd your pitch go? And it's like, oh, they laughed in all the right places. And he said, wait. They laughed like out loud. Well, yes, are they not? Like, and then we realized that a lot of them were just working their okay, and then this guy does this,
sure.
and he says this under,
they're
and they
like,
were
God,
reading it,
make this be
and
over.
We were
yeah.
performing it, and and sometimes we'd write songs for episodes, and I'd bring my guitar in, and we would play and sing the song as we were going. So for Phineas and Ferb, which was the first show that I created,
Small show. Nobody's heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. They ordered this pilot and they were asking, so when do you want to try to get the script in? I said, well, I'd rather not do a script. I'd rather write it and draw it at the same time because there's two characters in here who barely talk. And I think you won't get it otherwise, it's like, so I boarded that whole first episode, the roller coaster episode, while I was on vacation in France with my wife's family, and we would all go out to the museums at the day, or go down to the Riviera, whatever the hell we were doing, and then we would come back at 7 or 8 at night. They'd make dinner at this villa that my mother-in-law had rented, and then everybody would go to sleep. And I would stay up and start drawing and writing the roller coaster episode, and then Swampy was living in England at the time, and I So we went by England for a couple days, and he and I just put it out and just punched it up and changed, you know, like did whatever rewrites we wanted to do. And then I just pitched it to them, and they'd never had that happen. They'd never had an episode just pitched to them.
Sure.
And I'm good in a room, so I made everybody laugh. And then the head of the channel, I pitched it to the studio guy, and then the head of the channel heard how much fun this pitch was and wanted me to come and pitch to him. And I got
him
to like...
Are you talking about Gary?
Gary Marsh and Adam
Gary
Barnett.
Marsh.
I just had lunch with Gary just recently.
Oh, yeah? How's Gary doing?
He looks much more relaxed now. He's doing great. He's got his top button unbuttoned.
That's good.
Oh, wow.
In an industry where studio presidents change every 3 months,
he was in charge
of Disney Channel for like 30 years.
30 years.
Through all the best stuff. He's the one that really made it.
He's a great guy.
We'll send him the link to this episode then.
Phineas and Ferb is created internationally. You had to take the channel to actually finish the Phineas and Ferb pilot.
Very interesting, basically. And so I pitched it that way, and then other people wanted to see it pitched and stuff. And my executive said, okay, we also have to show this to Disney UK. Should we write up a script now, or should we just send them the boards? And I said, well, neither is going to have the effect of me actually pitching it. So I got in a room. I said, tell you what, there's a microphone in the casting room down here. I'll just bring the computer in because it's all on PowerPoint. It's all scanned in. And I'll pretend I'm pitching it to a room full of people into the microphone. And then I'll take that and turn that into an animatic. And so, I went home that weekend and I edited it all together and I found some sound effects and then I would cut out stuff that I felt like was absolutely unnecessary where I would be describing something. But most of the time I'm just like doing different voices for different characters and stuff.
Like a stop motion pilot.
And the Doofenshmirtz, and first of all, that's the best selling tool that's ever existed. And as far as I've been able to figure out, I invented it, the pitch reel. And lots of people have done that since then. But I was the first person, I think, to actually do that as a way of pitching their show. Like, here's an episode, like mostly finished.
Well,
and it takes away any of their having to try to figure
questions.
Out.
Yes,
how is this gonna be executed? They know how it's gonna be executed because they can see it. That's the best way to sell something.
In all fairness, you are a rarity in that very few people can do all of it. You know, where it's like I'm gonna draw it, I'm gonna sing the song, I'm gonna do the voice. I mean, that's like that. I mean, there's Seth MacFarlane, there's a handful of people that can do that. I'm not even sure Seth MacFarlane can draw the way that he can draw.
He can draw, but he would not have probably been able to use an editing software.
So there, I mean,
which I can do.
That's a rarity to kind of say I'm going to go in and I'm going to essentially do the entire thing, one man band it to figure out what's going on.
And I've sold them three shows now, and I've sold them all the same way by going in and just I'm just going to get like part of it is that I don't really like the process of development. I don't like the here's a script. We'll get some notes. We'll do some changes. Like, I don't want to do that for a year.
Right.
I just want to show them the show I want and let them decide whether they want that show or not.
And so
that's what I've done. I've gone through development three times and never had to go through development because I just
awesome.
Here it is.
That's crazy. That's
they
do you like
you
it?
Too, right, Dan? Like,
yeah.
I think over
well, they
time
do
with
now.
Disney, they trust you. It's funny, you must know Bob and Mark, right?
Who, yes, yeah.
Creators
no.
of Kim Possible.
Yes, exactly.
I just remember we had a lot of notes on Kim. We did. I mean, we always had something going on, and we would send it, overseas for animation, and our ADR process would sometimes, from episode to episode, be very lengthy.
But that's normal. I mean, you do that.
Oh, we have a lot
of
ADR because it's because I'm rewriting. It's not because the executives are rewriting.
Right. But Bob and Mark were also cut from the original kind of cloth of Bob, they're wonderful writers, the greatest guys you'll ever meet, great producers, but they're not going to get into a room and start singing songs and playing, doing the voices of the characters.
No, they're quieter.
They are much quieter guys.
Yes,
so then let me ask you a question. Well, let's very quickly would you rather it? If you had a choice, somebody came to you right now and said you get to produce and draw or you get to voice act, you can't do both. Which one do you pick?
I think I would want to produce and draw.
Okay.
I think as much fun as voice acting is, and it's a lot of fun, I think that I would get a little bored just voice acting for somebody else's show where I could,
like
a lot of Doofenshmirtz, and Doofenshmirtz came from that pitch reel in answer to your earlier question. Like the executive said, I think you should do Doofenshmirtz because we should do that voice that you're doing in the
yeah.
pitch reel. So,
sure.
And I love that character, but so much of the lines that we hear on TV for him were me making stuff up in the editing room because what we were getting wasn't quite what I think maybe we should go this way with it. What if what he's trying to do is this? And I would just like I would do something, I would make something up about Girl Scouts trying to buy me cookies and stuff, and and then I would have to then ADR it and match it exactly. And Doofenshmirtz has a lot of he's doing a lot of stammering, and so I would have to like count. He's not doing a lot, I would have to match my own, gobbledygook that I just made up on the spot.
It's like anime, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, trying to fit it into the mouth flaps.
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly. So
now, how did you come up with that voice? Was that, had you been doing that most of your life? You hear that a lot of people. It's like, I kind of did this voice forever.
I guess I, my sister tells me that that's the voice I would use when we were kids. And if we were playing some pretend thing where I was the bad guy and she was the good guy, I would always use that voice.
Okay.
And I didn't remember that, but she says, no, it just sounds like you to me.
E.G. Daly said the same thing, Will. E.G. said that when she was a baby, that she would, or when she got a little bit older, she would make these baby sounds. And that's what influenced her for Tommy Pickles.
I
know you also directed for Rugrats and whatnot.
I did not direct for Rugrats.
What?
That's on.
What?
That's on IMDb.
I swear that was on our thing. That was
It's on IMDb. It is absolutely incorrect.
Yeah, I love that. Those are my favorite things.
I don't know how to fix it. Yeah.
No,
it's one of the few shows I didn't work on. Yeah.
What? But let's talk. That's a good college.
No. Oh, yeah. No. It says my nephew was going to was applying to Occidental out here, and he got the packet from Occidental, and it says notable celebrity alumni. And there's my name, fourth down. And I looked. He called me, and he went, "You went to Occidental?" I went, "I did."
Oh my God!
So
yes,
Occidental. As far as I'm concerned at this point, if they've been using me to recruit, I get an honorary degree.
You should. You should.
Dan, this is a perfect segue into the other things you've done because you have, Phineas and Ferb, obviously enormous. But we just talked about how you were the creator of Rugrats. I'm kidding, of course.
Well done.
Thank you.
There's a whole online thing on TikTok because this one creator has continued this running joke that she says that I created the Minions. She's always thanking me for creating the Minions, which I did not do. But I get thanked for the Minions all the time in TikToks, and I'm like, I had nothing to do with the Minions.
Okay, so to clear it up then here on I Hear Voices, you created Rugrats, you created the Minions and Despicable Me. That's two.
Yeah, all those things.
Did you also, so let's see if you worked on Hey Arnold?
I worked on Hey Arnold, but almost everything else on IMDb is correct.
So Hey Arnold.
Directed on Hey Arnold.
SpongeBob.
Yes, I wrote and directed on SpongeBob.
Family Guy.
Family Guy was director for six seasons.
Six seasons. Wow. Okay, so I don't even need to name.
And I was the storyboard.
They got Rocko's Modern Life and everything else.
Rocko's my fave.
Yeah. So but, Family Guy, I was not only the director of my own episodes, but I was storyboard supervisor, which meant that Seth would do this thing that he called punting to Povenmire because he quickly realized that I had the same sense of humor as him and drew the same way he would like to draw if he had the time. And so he would do any musical number or any like thing that he just needed a big bunch of visual gags. He would just say, and then Dan's going to put in a bunch of visual gags here, and he would just give it to me and let me go. So I was the only guy on the artist side who was also sort of writing for the show. He called me the 13th writer.
Did you do any voices on Family Guy?
That was a great gig. No.
Family Guy's a great gig?
I was
Family Guy's a great gig.
It's a good gig.
Again, not to desert island you again, but if you yes. all the shows you've done, is there one you look back at and it's kind of like, that's the show for me? That's how I look, you know, my career, that's that show.
I think that would have to be Phineas and Ferb. I think that feels the most like me. Although this new one I'm doing one called Hamster and Gretel for the channel right now. It's premiering something in the
is it even the channel
future.
Anymore? Isn't it?
It is the
Disney
channel, but it's also Disney Plus. It's yeah. the channel okay. and Disney Plus is where it's
oh my
premiering.
God, I went there. And, okay, I was in yes. I was in LA. Not to sidetrack yes. you, Dan. I'm sorry.
And you went to the channel and it's
I
just
tried.
Not
nobody
the same.
Was there. Nobody's yeah. there. It's black no. and white. Yes. No color. Yeah. No paint. No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. No. Gary's not there. I went in. I got my Starbucks. Thought I could crash like the 13th, 18th floor, whatever it was. No. And it was like I went
I haven't
to
been back to the
desk.
Studio. I haven't been back to the studio since that Friday that they had us had us leave.
No one has.
2 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's still. I have friends that work at Disney. Weird. They're still doing everything remote. So it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
a little sadder. It's a little sadder.
Starting to. They're just now this month starting to get some productions back in there. And I was thinking, yeah. why can't they just let us all come in? And they said, well, the computers are over 2 years old now and they've been sitting. So
wow.
they're actually, the problem is that they are trying to replace all the computer systems. And that's what's taking a long time. So that's why they're
okay,
doing one production
sense.
At a time. And
wow.
we're like the, you know, we're like. Late July, I think we're going.
So
going
nobody, back. Nobody's turned on the Starship Enterprise in 2 years, and they don't know what's
yes,
going to happen
exactly.
when they crank up the nacelles again. Excellent.
Yes. Actually, I sort of lied before because last week I went to go find something at the studio, and I had to like plan 3 days in advance so that they would actually Jeez. Grant me access to the studio. And
yeah,
I went in,
it's totally different.
And it was like this weird. Ghost place.
That's
and
what I'm saying.
It was really strange. And I went yeah. into my office. It was like absolutely silent there. And yeah. Somebody had like I have a whole shelf full of Phineas toys. And
yeah.
somebody had obviously cleaned the shelf and put them back into like much better arrangement than I had. I was like, somebody put some real care into this. And then I went and I was like, oh, I should see it. I filmed it. I was like, how badly out of tune will my guitar be after 2 years? And I picked it up, and it was in tune.
Oh,
so that
wow.
means whoever cleaned the room
come
also
on, tuned
the guitar.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Like,
they walk around
Disney
with all their
magic.
Cleaning, yeah, all
it's
their
the
cleaning products
magic.
And
it was
a tuning fork.
The little
fork.
Fairies. Yeah,
that's exactly yeah. what it is.
It was the fairies.
That's amazing.
Somebody picked right. it up and said, oh, no, we gotta tune this. And I was like,
that's
strum.
Hilarious.
I was like, oh, my God. It wasn't perfectly in tune, but it was not 2 years out of tune.
It wasn't 2 years out of tune.
No.
All right, since we're talking... Phineas, I think we would get, yes. Our fans would be very upset if we did not ask, where did it come from? Where, I mean, how did that start? Where did the idea start and how did it go from there?
Phineas was Swampy and I trying to create, you know, like we'd been thrown together as a writing team and we loved writing together. And we're like, let's just create a show together and then we'll just get to write together for the rest of our careers. And then it took like 13 years to sell it, you know?
Did it really? It took that long to sell Phineas and Ferb?
It took 13 years.
Wow.
I have the hold on 1 second. I'll be right
yeah,
back.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I have the original.
Oh, this is cool. This is going to be cool, everybody.
Wow, only on I Hear Voices do you get this kind of access.
You get this kind of, well, you know why? I can honestly tell you why. It's because we're nerds and we love this stuff.
And we love Dan.
Bum, bum.
Oh, look at that.
We will have to take a screenshot and put this on our
yes.
Instagram.
So that yes. is the original.
That's the original, and it was...
Wow.
And it was one of those butcher paper tablecloths they give you at some restaurants.
Yeah.
Where they give you a little can of crayons to doodle while you're... So it's drawn in purple crayon on my tablecloth, and I liked it so much. I told my wife said, oh, who's that? And I was like... This is Phineas. This is this show I'm going to sell someday. Those were the actual words I said on that occasion. And I tore it off and I took it home and I drew Perry the Platypus and Doofenshmirtz and Ferb that night. And I took those four drawings in to work the next day. And Swampy and I built the whole room around that.
That's unbelievable. So, and you still have it, which is the coolest thing.
And I still have it all these years later. So, yeah.
Amazing. You should ensure that. Cool. Yeah.
And what's funny is that I had lost it for a long time. I had no idea where that was. And then within a week, I think it was the week that the show finally got its official green light. That weekend, we were planning a yard sale. And I was going through boxes and stuff like that. And in between two books was this drawing. And I was like... Oh, wow. And I was like, I'm caping it now, and I went and got it framed and stuff. So
it's a piece of that is a piece of animation in Hollywood history right there. That is very, very cool.
It is. It's very cool.
So the other thing, we are about a couple minutes away. So I don't know if you're aware of what we do, but we do something kind of fun here on the show.
Okay.
Where a guest gets to come in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Christy and I go to a lot of conventions and we deal with we get to meet a lot of people who want to be voiceover actors.
Yes.
And don't know how to go about it and don't really get the opportunity. So what we do is we have somebody come on who wants to be a voiceover actor and they get to do a little ad lib scene. And then we have a couple lines of dialogue that we have written for them.
OK.
We have a little game that we have called Across the Garden. And so what it is Christy and I are two little mice that are trying to get from one side of a garden to the other side of the garden, and we're meeting all of these characters along the way.
Okay.
And they get to pick who they want, you know, what kind of characters they want to be. We had some great ones. Phil Lamar was this awesome hummingbird.
Oh, my God, he was great.
He was great. We have some people that are vegetables. And the last episode that we did, which was very, very cool, Andrea Romano came out of retirement and actually directed directed one of the guests.
Yes.
So we have a guest coming on today all the way from England. It's like 1:30 in the morning there right now. But they are going to come on and if it's okay with you, we're just going to do a little scene. And then once they get the opportunity to do this, the hope is that when the season is over, we are going to take all these little segments and we are going to animate them.
We're going to do a pitch animatic.
And people are going to get to see themselves as cartoon characters and characters that they've created.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So what do you need from me? Am I supposed to be somebody in this?
Yeah, we'd love you to be somebody. And so where we are so far, picking up where we left off with our two mice, mice characters, we had just come around a very scary tree, and we are trying. Christy's character is trying to get to the mall to meet her
like
boyfriend.
She's
like a Gen Z, you know, like whatever.
She's like can't care.
Yeah, and my character is just very scared of everything. And please,
he's my little brother, and he's really annoying.
Okay.
So we're very mellow, and we're meeting all these crazy people along the way. You can be whoever you want to be. If you, we always say, you want to be a woodland creature, you want to be a vegetable, you want to be a human that's yelling down, whatever you'd like to be, you are more than welcome. And I think
is he
going to
tell us before?
I'll be a lawn gnome.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Oh, I love that so much. That's awesome. And
let's
Elizabeth, are we going to be bringing in? Is it Jordy? Jord? There's
He's
Jord.
He's here, everybody.
Hi,
it's Jord, ladies and gentlemen.
How are you?
I am very well. Wow, this is something that wasn't a thing earlier on.
Now we know that it is very early in the morning where you are right now, is it not?
Oh yes, I am three cups of teas in, so I'm all right. I'm good.
Wired and ready to record that, like any voiceover actor in the world.
Hi, Jordan. It's nice to meet you. This is how cool this podcast is, and how amazing our fans are. We needed to get somebody today because we've been doing different scheduling, and I put on my stories, which, by the way, Dan knows a thing or two about engaging with his fans on his TikTok. But I put on my stories, and Jord was the person who I picked to be on today's show. So, Jord, let's explain what we're doing today.
That's how it happens.
It's that fast.
When I saw your story, it was 7 hours ago. So I was like, surely not. But
yes,
this is how
know.
Fast the entertainment industry works, Jord. We need an actor. We go get an actor. That's how quick it is.
And
That's
you're right. a good fan, so thank you.
That is amazing. So I don't know if you are familiar with our little game here, and you're going to play with Dan Povenmire over here with Jord. So we are going across the garden, And what it is Christy and I are two little mice trying to get across the garden, and we are trying to meet people along the way who are helping us on our journey. You each get to pick your character. So Dan is going to be a garden gnome, which is kind of awesome. And Jord, is there some kind of character you'd like to be? Keep in mind, it could be
we're two mice,
animal, so vegetable, or mineral. Doesn't matter. You're allowed to pick whatever you want. That is the joy of the world of animation, is you can be whatever you'd like to be.
So what I'm going to do is none of that and be the simplest character.
Fair enough.
I am going to be a dog that happens to be in the garden.
Love that.
Absolutely.
Love that. Does your dog have a name?
Odie the dog.
Odie the dog. The dog, as in Garfield and Odie?
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah, there you go.
Love that.
Totally based on my actual dog called Odie.
Okay, great. So what we're then going to do is we will do a very quick run of the scene. We'll keep it real brief. And then I think you also have some lines that we sent you, right, Jord?
Yes.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're just going to do a quick ad-lib scene. And then we're going to come back to you and we're going to do a real VO session with you. We're going to need you to do the three lines three different times. We're going to give you a little direction. And just like in a session, we're going to go from there. Does that work for you?
Excellent. This is a dream come true. I've always wanted to do this, so thank you. Let's
Yay!
Go.
Very, very cool. We cannot wait. All right, Christy?
Yeah.
I think we set the scene where last time... Yeah. Oh, she's already in character. She's like, yeah. Yeah. last time, as we left off across the garden, memory serves, we had just rounded a very, very nasty tree who didn't want us to be anywhere near him. And we're still very far away from the mall, aren't we, Christy? Take it away.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to a mall, and we're a little lost right now. Would you come along? Come on.
Yeah,
you're hiding.
Maybe this garden gnome can help us. Excuse me, Mr. Gnome, please don't scare me.
Yeah,
but,
what?
We're trying to get to the mall. Why did you have to go to the mall again?
Doesn't matter. I don't want to keep talking about it, okay? Listen.
So you're asking me for directions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You realize I'm made out of ceramic. I haven't moved from this spot in, well, since they stuck me here.
That's a good point.
Well, but
I'm assuming, which way did you come from? Was there a mall where you came from?
No, there was a mouse hole. Yeah.
Then maybe if you keep going the direction you're going, you're at least 50% of the way there.
That 50%. Seems very, very vague.
Well,
but it also feels
everything
very
in that specific. Direction is not a mall, is what I am saying. So
everything
in this direction might be a mall because that's the direction you're going.
Would you like us to try to spin you around, or are you happy with your direction?
Actually, if you could give me just like a quarter turn, because I'm just trying to do the other side of my face.
Do you want to grab the other side?
Yeah,
ready?
Okay, go ahead.
So heavy.
Wait. No, that's too much. That's too much. Oh, no.
Oh, man.
We tipped him.
He fell.
Oh, we tipped him over. Is the mall straight up?
You know, the grass is nice.
Okay.
The grass is nice.
Hey.
I do not see a mall straight up, if that helps you at all.
Hold on a second. Aren't you that guy from TikTok?
No, that's some other guy entirely. I'm a much better looking guy than that.
The TikTok gnome. That guy's got like 5.8 million followers. He's awesome.
Yeah.
There's a dog. There's a dog coming.
Oh, hello. I noticed that you were pushing over this silly little gnome. I was wondering why? Why are you doing this?
Oh, God, I hate dogs.
How
I would appreciate
dogs?
It.
They're so cute. Hi, what's your name?
Hello. Mr. Gnome, if you could just turn over so your ears can hear. My name is Odie, and I am a lovely little dog. And I hear that you want to go to a mall.
Well, they want to go to the mall. I just want to lay here in the grass and hopefully not get peed on by a dog.
That's okay. You're not red and you're not a fire hydrant.
Excellent.
So it's fire.
How do you feel about being peed on by a mouse? Because we're kind of past that stage at this point.
Okay. I thought it was just the moisture of the grass.
Let's go with
that. It's not as pleasant as it was.
Why is it green?
You just peed on the TikTok gnome.
Maybe then I'll go viral. I'm sorry. I didn't mean
that's
that. I'll show
funny.
Myself out.
Don't.
Okay, so can you see where we're going up there, Odie?
Yes. I am a British little dog, so I call them shopping centres, but I believe it's the one with the big Target red thing over there.
No, that's it. Yeah.
Yes. So that closed. So what you're gonna have to do is
wait, what do you mean it closed? My boyfriend the rat is there. We have to go and see him before he leaves. Are you telling me that it doesn't exist anymore?
Well, I'm telling you, he is a rat and he has lied to you.
Oh no. Oh, she's crying.
Or maybe, stay with me on this. Maybe it's not closed for rats.
Yeah, that's possible too, but...
Yes.
Maybe it's just closed for people, I don't know.
But dogs, it's because you're a dog, that's why. It's
because
you're
a dog. Is it because I'm not a guide dog and I don't guide people because it's shut?
Not helpful. You just made me so upset. Very good.
And scene. Perfect.
Very good.
Was wonderful. Now, George, very quickly. So you got the dialogue in front of you?
I do, yes.
All right. So in the entertainment industry, in the voiceover world, we're doing A, B, and C takes. So we're going to give us three takes of each line and switch it up. In between, you know, what you want to emphasize or kind of energy you want to give it, but give us that dialogue. We'll do the first one first and go from there. You ready?
I am ready.
All right, here you go. Here's number one. Go for it. And action.
Yeah, I avoid that guy like the bees avoid. Oh, what an analogy I can think. Oh, I got nothing. Just stay away from him.
Nice. Give us one more, and then instead of in the middle, just give us kind of hemming and hawing sounds, like, something like that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I avoid that guy, like the bees avoid, I got nothing. Just stay away from him.
Perfect. See, take anything you want to do. Just play.
Yeah, I avoid that guy like the bees avoid. Oh, what's something really clever? I'm not clever. I got nothing. Just stay away from him.
Perfect. Sir, as they would say in the booth, circle the C take. All right, number. Now you got, here's your second line. Again, give us an A take. Here you go.
Is that the mall with the good food court and the two Forever 21s? Doesn't that make it 42?
Great. How about one more kind of to yourself and a little quicker?
Is that the mall with the good food court and the two Forever 21s? Doesn't that make it 42?
Awesome. Give us a C take. Anything you want to do.
Is that the mall / shopping center with the food court and the two Forever 21s, which me as a British person have never heard of? Doesn't that make it 42?
Circling the C take again, I think we've seen that when you let Jord go, that's when you get the best take.
Yeah. Let's try. Robin Williams with it. Let's just go Robin Williams with it.
Let's try your third line here. Take it away.
You think you've got problems? My best friend ran off with my wife and I really miss him.
Give us another one.
You think you've got problems? My best friend ran off with my wife and, oh, I really miss him.
And now the C take, anything you want to do.
You think you've got problems? My best friend ran off with my wife and, oh, I really miss him when he used to stroke my back.
Oh, there we go. Jord, you killed it. You killed
it. Thank you very much.
Mic drop. Got into the booth and you killed it, my friend. Thank you so much for hanging out with us and for sharing this with us. We think that's great.
Thank you. Oh, so thank you for the opportunity for me to come in. I've been watching, KP since 2002. KP started when I was starting secondary school, high school, and it finished when I left school. So it was literally the perfect program for me to find myself and to become who I am today. And Dan Povemeyer, thank you for Phineas and Ferb.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Good luck with your new show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That is so cool. Jord, thank you for staying up with us. Hopefully after your three cups of tea, you're going to be able to sleep now.
You're going to need a sleepy time.
But you killed it, and we can't wait till you get to actually see yourself animated and Odie the dog comes to life, because you're the one who gave him life, my friend. That's awesome.
Did not know that. I'm even more excited now.
Just wait. We're working on it. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for being here.
Everybody. Awesome. Wow.
Ciao.
That was so unbelievably cool. Oh, man, I love doing that.
It is fun. Now, Dan, you do have this new show coming out. Do you want to talk about that, or can you talk about it?
Yeah, it's coming out on the channel and on Disney Plus. I don't think I can give you a date yet, but it's sometime, I think, this summer. I'm really thrilled with it. I think it's got all the humor of Phineas and Ferb, but it's also got a bunch of action. It's also got a bunch of heart. It's really about a family in a way that none of the other shows really were. And and it's about a brother and sister who are quite a few years apart. The brother can drive, and he's been waiting to get his license so that he can be out on the open road and in charge of his own destiny. And of course, he gets his license, and then he just becomes the chauffeur to his little sister. Which is what happened to me when I was growing up. I had a sister that was 10 years younger than me, and I just became her, like, okay, you're going to soccer practice. Let's go. You know, it's like I became that. But in the midst of that, they're on the road one day, and they get stopped by aliens that tell them that the two of you have been chosen to receive superpowers, and they shoot them with this beam, and he's like, this is great. We're going to be a brother-sister superhero team, you and me. And then... but unfortunately, the superpowers go on to Gretel, the sister, and her pet hamster, who happens to be in the car, which, as you can imagine, causes a little friction. But but so the series is really just about sort of the two of them and the hamster, you know, and he's still the older brother and still feels very protective of her and wants to, you know, make sure she's okay and guide her and stuff. And she's all id and impulse and... Right. She doesn't really need protection because she can lift a school bus over her head. But he becomes like the guy on the headphones in the van, you know, telling her which way to go, and sort of the brains of the team.
He's the chair guy.
And we're having the best time with it. Apparently, got the best audience scores in the focus tests since the original Phineas. So
that's wow.
The executives are really excited about it. The channel's really excited about it. And I'm having just the time of my life. I think
that's
it's a lot of fun.
Amazing. And where can people find you social media-wise?
Oh, I'm Dan Povenmeyer on TikTok. I'm Dan Povenmeyer on Twitter sometimes. I don't do Twitter or Instagram as much. And I'm YouTube,
and
I'm Dan Povenmeyer.
Dan? Why are you on TikTok? What's so exciting about
TikTok,
it?
TikTok is so much more fun than any social media that I've ever attempted. And, you know, it's part of it is that's where all the Phineas and Ferb fans went. You know, it's like I didn't grow much on Twitter or Instagram after the show stopped.
Yeah.
But I did like one TikTok where I did the doof voice, and it got... like 2 million views, and I was like, oh, this is where all the, like, I thought people just forgotten about the show, and I was like, that's fine, it had its day, you know. And and I suddenly realized there's this rabid following of people who just love that show. But the other thing is, like, I get to make little movies all the time. I get to, you know, I get to, you know, like, plan and edit and perform in these little movies, and I'm just having the most fun.
Good.
And as soon as I started doing stuff on it, I grew so fast. I had I had a million followers within like the first 2 months.
Wow.
And, you know, and it was like, which was so much more than I'd ever, you know, like, I think I have 100,000 on Twitter, which is a great number. Like, I would have been really thrilled to have that number back in the day. And so now I just... that's what I do with my spare time. You know, the pandemic made it very easy to do that. Now I'm running a show again. I started doing it when we were in the end of the Phineas and Ferb movie that we did for Disney Plus, Candace Against the Universe. It's on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100% Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Yes.
Just going to throw it out there. But I, you know, so I was, everything was winding down, and that would usually be a time in between shows where I would sort of feel depressed and like really just like, oh man,
you Dan?
Know, and now, you know, and because of TikTok, I was able to throw myself into something else and you're like, ooh, and I can green screen. I was learning a lot of new things about the editing program and doing skits with my daughters and you know, promoting the show, promoting the movie. And it was just so much fun. It kept me sane during that time where I would have otherwise been stuck inside a house, you know, for a year. And so I've just had the best time. I'm so addicted to it. It's the first thing I do in the morning is I check my mentions. And
Dan,
and I try to,
me too, you know, man. So me too.
Wow. I don't know. I'm fighting a losing battle here. I don't know. I might have to check
out
TikTok.
Are you not on TikTok? You should.
I'm not on any. I have no social media presence whatsoever.
Really?
I don't even have Facebook. I have nothing. I have zero.
Will's good with us.
To me, it's been so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. And also what I think is cool about Dan is that like all of that live action stuff that you wanted to do, it's like a part of that in you.
Yeah.
It's like traveling through that.
Exactly.
And it's so nice to see when the fans react so organically to every, you know, to your legacy. And I think it's really cool that you're out there.
Yeah. And it's cool. It's cool to see that, you know, like
Seth MacFarlane's
these songs,
not out there, right?
I know.
He's not on TikTok.
Yeah. But there's all these songs that we wrote. You know, for Phineas, we wrote a song for every 11 minutes. I wrote 400, 500 songs for Disney at this point. And there's all these songs that we wrote in, you know, there's a song called Busted where I just was looking it up the other day on TikTok. And there's hundreds of thousands of videos, not views.
Is that the rap
videos one? That people did, huh?
Is that the rap one? Well, really?
No, the rap
understand.
One was a huge... That was a huge trend on TikTok.
Huge
there were hundreds
trend,
of thousands
guy.
Of those.
Wow.
It was like hundreds of millions of views for that. But just watching people doing, like Busted was great because there's a whole choreography that I drew for it. And it was Candace and Vanessa, these two characters. And it's like a shot like a music video. And it's just this fun little pop song that me and Martin Olsen wrote in an hour. In 2005, and so like people doing cool harmony parts of it and stuff like that. It's so cool to see that these songs have really stood the test of time. You know, there was a guy who was at Lollapalooza with his band and played the Phineas and Ferb theme song as like a surprise thing for them. And it's this sea of people that goes off into the horizon and they're all freaking singing along.
Yes.
And
that
it
is
made
the influence.
I like burst into tears. I'm like watching TikTok and I'm like crying. And my wife comes out and she's like, what's going on? I was like, watch this. And then she started crying. It's just cool to see that the show meant so much to so many people. Like the guy said, you know, Kim Possible defined this part of his childhood.
Yeah.
And that's what you get when you do kids TV, is you get people growing up and nostalgia for them is the thing that you made. And you know, that's amazing, I think.
Oh man. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, to say lasting the test of time and generational are as an understatement. It's going to be around forever. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Whole new generations too finding it with all the streaming services and everything going on. So
that's really
pretty
cool.
Wonderful. Well, will you come back and join us again? I feel like we haven't
Absolutely,
even
anytime.
Scratched the surface.
In studio.
Anytime.
Dang
next
it.
Time you're, next time you're in LA, I'll come into the studio. Aw,
thanks,
great.
Dan.
Well,
you're a
thank
legend.
Thank you so much.
And we love you.
All right. Ciao, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
I Hear Voices is hosted by Wilfred Ellen, Christy Carlson Romano. Produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham and executive produced by Brendan Rooney and Wilfred L. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. And that was my announcer voice.
Some side effects of listening to I Hear Voices are sore abs from hilarity, falling down the Cocomelon rabbit hole, sneezing due to mass nostalgia, and hugs.
Follow I Hear Voices wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss any of the amazing voices.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at I Hear Voices Podcast. To see the video stream, subscribe to my YouTube channel.
You can also check us out on MySpace, Omegle, Vine, LimeWire, AIM, and Napster.
Okay, Will, let's teach you about the internet.
The what?